Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Fighter's Voice with Don McGuire, presented by Finished MMA and the United Way Merced.
Your boy Sloan Bone of the Mo Thugs Movement, part of the Bone Thugs and Harmony family tree, the 86ers brand ambassador. Check it out though, listen. In a world full of followers, be proud to be different. Be an 86er. So what I need y'all to do is go to the 86ers.net. We got the dopest apparel, men and women. Everything you need for a fresh start. I'm talking tees, zip-ups, tanks, hoodies, and the best hats at a price nobody can match. I'ma ask you this though. What do your clothes say about you? If you don't know, come to the 86ers.net and find yourself out. And a special shout out to Don McGuire, the host of The Fighter's Voice. Salute, big homie.
Salute to Bone Thugs and Harmony for the commercial. You know, ladies and gentlemen, we got a hell of a show for you tonight. You know, I really didn't plan it out this way, but it worked out to even be a better show than what I first initially thought it was going to be, so because we got some fight announcements tonight. So that's going to be kind of dope. You know, our first guest is a tremendous person on their path in the sport, in all different genres. And it's kind of an honor for me to have her on. You know, Bellator kind of thinks highly of her, so we're going to rock a show out with Misdemeanor Mandy Polk. Mandy, how you doing?
Hi, Don. I'm well. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's the honor's all mine. Anybody associated with Bellator is a friend of mine.
Awesome.
You know, like I told you, the show is going to go a totally different direction because, you know, they do call me the Barbara Walters of MMA. But,
goodness.
You know, some fight news broke, you know, and unlike other sources, I can't just jump out there and say them, and nor would I put a fighter on the spot and risk their career or the fight opportunity for them. But I got approval from Bellator. Ian Matthews himself gave me the approval. So you got a hell of a fight coming up at Bellator. You know, it's gonna be quite interesting, man. You're fighting Kerry Melendez. What were the thoughts that went through your head when you got that opportunity? Because you're on a 3-fight win streak. She's 3-0, so it's really, it's a fair playing field.
What were my thoughts? Well, first of all, Don, I had really actually wanted that fight, I don't know, a year or two before when I found out that she was fighting 115 for Bellator, not because I had anything against Kerry Melendez, but because, was I allowed to say that yet?
Yeah.
Okay, you, not because I had anything.
I got approval, I got... Hey, Bellator's gave me 100% approval. I showed you the text, so you're good to go on anything you want to say.
Cool. Well, I had wanted to work with Bellator in the future, for a while. You know, I was looking forward to hopefully doing that. And when I found out that Kerry Melendez had dropped a weight class and was fighting for them, I just thought it would be a good fight. I was like, that'd be cool if I could fight her. And then I got a potential matchup with Stephanie Frausto, Zoila Frausto's sister.
Yeah.
And that was in Bellator, and that one didn't work out. We accepted it. We accepted the match, and I think something happened with it to where they didn't have the fight anymore. They had too many fights on the card, and that was the last matched one, so they just scratched it off. So that stunk, but... I thought, you know, maybe in the future I can fight Stephanie and then maybe I can fight Kerry. Again, not because I was like super wanting to fight her specifically for any big reason other than she was doing well in Bellator at 115 and I wanted to as well. So how did I feel when I found out about that? It was exciting. It was really fortuitous. I had been... stood up to meet a guy at the time. I was out waiting at a restaurant and he never came. He didn't message. And I found out that the fight was definitely going to happen, that Bellator was definitely going to offer me a contract, my manager told me. And I immediately called one of my girlfriends and said, you have to meet me up here. We're going to go out because it's the last time I can until the fight, and I'm already out.
Yeah. Well, you know, this was kind of cool because you are coming off of a fight, and you get offered this contract with Bellator. So that right there is something that's already righteous. And then on top of that, you get to fight the person that you initially wanted to fight to begin with. So that's got to be pretty cool in your mind. I mean, you know, she's predominantly Muay Thai. You're kind of everything. You know, that's what I kind of want to get into a little bit.
What I'm good at? No, I'm kidding. Go ahead.
No, I just want to take you back in time
sure.
a little bit, take you back. Just, you know, a lot of people get into the sports for different reasons. A lot of people find different aspects, different genres of the path they want to walk. You know, you've chosen several aspects of, you know, being a competitor, and you've done quite well at all of them. What initially, you know, invoked you into this world?
I was a professional fitness competitor prior to this, and obviously I got into that because I like to work out, I like to train, I like to push myself, I like to push myself athletically. It was a good outlet, and that one, the fitness competitions, I was ready for a change in my training, and I watched fighting, and those people seemed to train a lot, so I wanted to try it out, just to train and try it out.
You know, I've interviewed everyone from Tate to Akane Negro to Tobias Young. I mean, I do a lot of different shows because I think every sport's cool pretty much, except for, I think, soccer. Most people.
How did I know you were going to say that? And I don't even dislike soccer, but I had a feeling that was what you were about to say.
Yeah, well, I don't know. But,
it doesn't do it for you.
No. You know, but how hard is it for you to transition down from the size you were? I mean, because, you know, to my listeners, if you've never looked her up, go look at pictures. I mean, you were stacked. I mean, you were cut. You were artwork, I guess you could say. You know, your physique was well-defined. How do you transition?
Go ahead. My body hasn't changed all that much from when I was doing fitness competitions. In 2016, I did a fight, and then I did a fitness competition at the professional level, having not been on stage in 7 years. I placed in the top 10. That's crazy. I did another one 2 weeks after that, placed in the top 5, which way better than the first one. Also crazy. 3 weeks after that, I had an MMA fight, professional MMA fight against Ann Malinoff in the Chicago area for Hoosier Fight Club, which I won. So I went fight at 125, fitness competition, fight at 112. So, and I did well in all of those. I won the first fight at 125. I placed in the top 10 in the fitness competition in the IFBB. I placed top 5 in the fitness competition in IFBB in Phoenix, Arizona. And then I went on to fight 112 in HFC. So my body hasn't really changed all that much, considering I was able to sandwich 2 fitness competitions and do well in them in between 2 fights. So as far as how have I had to change my body to adapt, I would say I definitely had to improve some of the muscle endurance. I had to improve the muscle endurance, but I did professional fitness routines. And if you haven't seen that, it's a one-woman Cirque du Soleil, and you can't breathe when you're done. It's awful. Anaerobic capacity for a human, meaning how long you can sprint before you run out of fuel to do so, is 90 seconds, and that's how long the routine is. It's a two-minute routine, so they're asking you to go a little bit past your threshold of what's possible for you to sprint. So I already had a very demanding and a very athletically demanding career that somewhat translated to what is required of your body in the fighting arena.
Yeah, see, what I was kind of looking at, you know, because I'm kind of different that way. You know, I because I deal with so many bodybuilders, and I deal with different scientists and doctors and aspects on weight cut and massive rehydration and things of that nature. I do some kind of weird shows, but, you know, that's the thing that it intrigued me because, you know, you've got this muscle mass and you have to go into a cut, you know, and you're already defined. There's no fat on you. There's nothing to give. You know, so that's what I was trying to get at was.
Well, muscle is.
Was that transition kind of hard on you, or was it something that you were just able to, you know, overcome and just face it with adversity, or however you did?
It wasn't hard at all, to be honest, for a couple reasons. Number one, it's easier to cut when you have more muscle. Their muscle is like between 75% and 90% water. Fat is like 3% to 10% water. So if you have a lot of muscle mass and you're in a weight cut trying to sweat water out, you have a lot more water available if your body composition is more muscular. So it kind of makes the cut easier, actually.
Okay, that's good to know. You know, this sport...
And the other reason... I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Go ahead. Hey, I cut you.
Well, then another reason, another transition that was to my benefit was all the fast twitch muscle fiber I had already created from a young age. You know, a lot of people get into martial arts at a very young age as a child. I didn't even think about it till I was 24 or 25. I never even thought about myself doing it until that age. So it's a little bit late of a start. Not as late of a start as Marion Renau, who's awesome, but it's still pretty late. She started when she was like 32. She's awesome in the UFC. But I already had this explosion about me, and a lot of people will come from traditional martial arts and then have to develop a strength and conditioning program and have to really build that up and get into it. And it was just not anything that I ever really needed to address as an emergency within my training. It was like I already had the perfect machine for it. I just had to take it for a drive.
Yeah, so actually you got to work backwards, you know, and kind of figure mm-hmm. things out. That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
You know, Momo is a good friend of mine too. So she does my show all the time, Marion Renau. Tremendous lady of the sport. You know, that's what I love about my show is I can talk about what I want. I don't have no corporation kind of digging into me. You know, you've transitioned from, you know, bodybuilding and that aspect of your life. Then you became, you know, had fighting in between there, and you developed a love for fighting. You know, and now you get to showcase it for the world in front of Bellator, you know, and Bellator Nation's dope. You know, I don't know if you've ever been at one of their fights or one of their promotions
yes.
or whatever,
yes.
but, man, it's great, you know, and I look at fighters like Dave Rickles, Syed Awad. You know, Bellator is one of the top promotions in the world. People always say UFC, but I can sit here and name a slew of fighters that never had to fight in the UFC but still made a tremendous living. So, you know, I'm kind of partial to Bellator anyway. But
me too.
You know, yeah, go figure, right? But,
mm-hmm.
you know, what was it like for you to now you sit back and you think about that phone call you got? And, you know, now you sit back and you look back and you get that reflection and everything that's just, you know, truly transpired for you. You know, how does it truly make you feel, not just as a gladiator, but as a person that is striving to find their place?
Felt validated. I mean, I'm about to have my 11th professional fight. There are girls that have fought for Bellator that are 0-1, 1-0. I deserve to be here.
You know, and you couldn't have got a better first fight. I mean, come on.
No. that is a fact. That
I mean,
is
if
a
you're
fact.
Make a
on
statement.
The main card, on the main card against someone who's well known in Bellator, it's really, really cool. I was on such I was on such a high, I had to get on medicine for it. I'm not going to lie. I mean, I'd say I deserve to be here, and let's calm it down. Let's calm it down about me being in Bellator. It's not a big deal. I deserve to be there. But it is a huge deal, and it excited me so much that I literally couldn't handle it. But I'm proud, and I feel that I deserve it, though.
Yeah. You know, I think you do deserve it. You know, you've done a tremendous job and everything that you put your hands to. You know, I kind of want to ask you an off-topic question. It's kind of weird. But, you know,
cool.
I've asked Kung Lee this. I've asked, I think I even asked Pat Miletich.
Oh, he's awesome. I love Pat Miletich.
Oh, yeah. That's my boy. But
he's one of the toughest people alive ever.
He's a cool dude. He has a deep story. If most people get to know Pat, you'll love him. And you'll love him for life. He always calls me when he's in town and makes me come to the fights with him. But
that's awesome.
I want to ask you a question, and I want you to sit back and just think about it and give me your answer. You know, what does pride, passion, and persistence truly mean to Mandy Polk?
I never, ever thought about that. I simply never thought about not going to practice. It's how I dealt with a lot of things in my life. It's therapeutic. It's an escape. It's community. It's so much to me that I can't imagine what I would have and what I wouldn't have without the training and the relationships that I've created in the sport. It's very important for me to be able to go train that day, not because I want the workout. I mean, maybe I do. I don't know. But there's jiu-jitsu out there to be learned, and I need to be learning it, or somebody else is, and that's not fair. The persistence, I've had so many crazy things happen in all the sports. I've had so many things happen in all the sports that I've done. Someone was trying to beep in on my phone. Who would do that?
Yeah, how rude.
How rude. Are they not listening to the interview? Rachel? Listen to the interview, Rachel. I never thought about not going to practice unless I was, like, really sick or something like that. So the passion, the pride, the persistence, all that comes down to just daily things, is their habits. I love fighting. I love watching it. I love going to the shows. I love the people involved. I love the energy about it. I love following people's stories. But more than anything else, it's what I have to do on a daily basis to be involved with this that makes it such a happy thing for me. It's like brushing my teeth.
You know, life is crazy, you know, and people really that are just fans of the sport, they really don't get how much time and effort it takes. You know,
can I share with you a story about passion and persistence from my fitness competition days?
Oh, go ahead. Yeah, the show's about you.
You sound like my boxing coach, Tom. Hey, Tom. He's a cool dude, and y'all talk alike. Free-spirited type, but with opinions. I used to live in Las Vegas. I moved there when I was 19 years old for fitness competitions. I had a great opportunity to work with my idol in the sport, Kelly Ryan. I'm sure that name does not sound familiar, and that's okay. It's kind of an obscure sport, but she was the best at fitness routines in the division, and she came in second place at the Fitness Olympia, like something like 5 years in a row. So she was more consistent than the people that won the thing, and everybody would get so mad that she didn't win. I knew she was the best. She was the absolute best. And I had the opportunity to go work with her, and she said that she would show me the ropes of the fitness industry in Las Vegas and how to make money at fitness in Las Vegas, and help me with my – so not only helping me with the business, but helping me with the competition end of things. And she'd also gotten into real estate part-time for her transition of her retirement from fitness. So she had a house for me to rent. So it was just very, very fortuitous that it happened at that time. No, I did not finish college. That stinks, but it is still there. And Kelly is in prison now. So I had one opportunity to learn from her, and I took it. I'm not sorry I did it. And I went out there, I was training, I was working really hard, and I had a fitness competition in New York. I can explain the prison thing later. That's another story for another time. I had a fitness competition in New York to turn pro. You have to get to a certain level. They're national level shows. There's about, usually for fitness, there's like one or two a year where the fitness is sanctioned. You can turn pro at that if you win your division. So my two opportunities in 2006 were at Team Universe in July in New York and Nationals in November in Miami. So I flew from Vegas to New York. I competed in the middle of my fitness routine. I was looking Dexter Jackson, a friend of mine, dead in the eye when I did a front flip called a suicide, aptly named, and broke my foot in four places on stage, and there was a bone sticking out of my foot. This was 1 minute into a two-minute fitness routine. I finished the routine. I crawled off stage. They had to get my shoe off, and I looked and saw a bone sticking out of my foot, and I asked the medical who was back there by me. Well, I didn't ask them anything at first. At first, I was freaking out. And Rob Klein, one of the expediters who had a wife that competed and was very good, he told me to breathe. And he said, hey, Mandy Kimmy, his wife, who also did well at the Olympia, he said, Mandy, Kimmy broke her foot. And she was on stage 3 months later. It'll be okay. And I immediately calmed down. I was like, whoa, wait, it's July? Let's see here. August, September, October, November. Okay. I can still turn pro in 2006. I immediately settled down, and I asked them to put the bone back in place right there, which they did, because I wanted it to happen before I went into, you know, before I came out of shock and it would hurt really bad. I went to the emergency room there, and then I flew back home to Vegas. Of course, on the plane, my foot swelled up to high heavens. I got home, and I went through a series of three doctors, and there was more fractures to each specialist. I was sent to a better specialist. And by the end, we had a treatment plan with one of my clients' dads, who's one of the top orthopedic surgeons in the nation. They were going to do all this crazy rebuilding of my foot, and there was going to be a cage around it and pins sticking out of it. And it didn't sound very fun, but they weren't going to leave any materials in my foot. So when it was all said and done, my foot would literally be as good as new, was the plan. And I liked that plan. I just didn't like the healing time. It was like 16 weeks, and it made it very iffy to do the show in November where I could turn pro. So I was like, but it's more important for my foot to be good. So I go home, bombed. I don't know if I can do that competition. I can't go to the gym and train people. I have a great personal training business in Las Vegas. I made so much money. Oh, my gosh. But I made the same amount of money in Memphis, but I was younger and dumber then. So the fact that people paid me that much was amazing. So I had my plan, and then I was still bummed, but I was going to work through it. And my dad called me and asked me how I was, and I said, you know, I'm bummed. And he didn't have much to say, which kind of hurt my feelings. And I said, well, Dad, if you could call me back when you have something to say, I would really appreciate it. I love you. I'm not mad. And I hung up the phone. The next day, my mother called me and told me that my father was found in a parking lot with an insulin needle by him and injected himself so heavily he had attempted suicide. And I didn't blame myself. Normal people don't have a conversation with their daughter and then feel bad enough to try to kill themselves. Like, people get in fights with their kids all the time. So I was more irritated than anything else because I'm his next of kin. He'd been divorced from my mother for 20 years, and he didn't have any other children. I have siblings, but they're half siblings. So I had to take my swollen ass foot from flying on the plane from New York to Vegas to get on another plane to come to Memphis to get him inside of a facility where they would help him, you know, transition him from ER to care for the issues. And I had to sign for everything because I'm the next of kin, so I had to come and do it. Foot swelled up even more. At this point, my bones are going to start knitting, which means, you know, closing off at the ends, whether I like it or not. So I had, to find a surgeon here. So I had to abandon that plan that I told you about. And I found a guy. Oh, there's some kind of echo on here, and it's bothering me.
It's not on my end.
Okay, maybe it's my phone. I had to find a, I found a doctor here who was prepared to put plates and screws in there and told me I would be walking on my feet in 5 weeks. So I thought to myself, this may have worked out better. I had the surgery here. I got better pretty quick. I had to go back to Las Vegas and get all of my belongings and drive them back home. I rebuilt because I still had to look after my dad. You know, I couldn't just get him in somewhere and then go back to Vegas and start training my people. That wouldn't be right. So in the middle, so I got surgery, rebuilt my whole clientele, and got ready for the fitness competition. Won my class and was the youngest person to turn pro in fitness at the time.
And still turned around and correlated yourself into the fight world. You know, that's a tremendous story, and you should be commended for it. You know, people don't understand adversity, and, you know, and you talked about the situation with your father. I kind of just went through something like that with a brother of mine, but he ultimately last weekend committed suicide.
I'm sorry.
You know, people go to war, they don't come back the same. And he had a lot of demons, but we didn't talk for like the last 2 weeks prior to his death. I ignored him, and because of the situation, and a couple other brothers did too. We were in an inner circle because we're para athletes. I'm an amputee from diabetes, so you know we correlated quite well because we understand each other's lives, and you know it just got to a point that. You know, he needed to chill for a second because there's many nights that I spent dealing with his demons from 9 o'clock at night to 7 o'clock the next morning and, you know, making sure he got through another day. And, you know, life has a way of just throwing us curveballs, but it also has a way of making us stronger. And, you know, that's kind of how I do my show. You know, so the next question is kind of going to be kind of deep, but, you know, I think it's necessary to be quite honest with you. Because there's so much intent in you, you know, and you could see the type of, you know, person you are by the way you speak. You know, who was it that created that intent in you? Who is that one person that you would say is that angel on your shoulder?
I wouldn't call her an angel on my shoulder, but my mom definitely created the intent. When I was very young, I had been accepted to a private school in Memphis. It's probably the best school here, St. Mary's, and I was very young. And my mom and my dad were getting divorced, and they gave me an aptitude test. My mom was taking me to school one day. She wasn't going to give up her house in the suburbs. She wasn't going to give up taking me to private school. She wasn't going to give up her awesome job downtown. She wasn't going to change a thing. She wasn't going to let anything stop her or me. And she told me this. She said, based on the testing, you should make straight A's or you're not trying and you'll be in huge trouble. You're smarter than me, so you have to do it. And I was like, how can I be smarter than my mom? My mom taught me everything. She said, no, the test said that you have the ability to do things that I couldn't. So if I have to go to work every day and work my ass off, the least you could do is go to this school and get perfect grades. And I was like, all right, that's fair enough.
That's dope. I like that. You know, Mandy, we're kind of going to have to wrap things up here shortly. I got a couple more questions for you, or one's a statement. You're now in Bellator. You're facing Kerry Melendez. If you had to make a statement, either to Kerry Melendez or to Bellator Nation, or just to the world in general, what would they can expect at Bellator 222, I believe, what would that statement be?
I want all the smoke.
Damn. like that. I think out of my 16 years, I've never heard that before. That's dope. I want all the smoke.
Thank you.
That's dope. I mean,
thanks,
I thought
man.
I've heard it all, but now I really heard it. I want it all. You know, it's tremendous. You know, congratulations. This is kind of like a 2-for-1 deal. Like we talked about earlier, you get into Bellator, and you get to fight the person that you wanted to fight. You know, my friend, I'm truly proud of you. All the accomplishments we can't talk about in half an hour. Next time I need to schedule you for an hour interview.
Awesome.
Those are really fun. You know, I don't care what people think, but 300,000 plus people like listening to my show, so I must be doing something right.
Absolutely.
I like
to
brag
so.
Every once in a while, but the thing about
you have
it is,
to.
Well, Stitch is teaching me quite well. You know, Stitch is telling me, you know, I need to stand up and let people know what I do, and I never do in life, but I'm starting to, and I'm finding out it pays off. You know, it does. It pays off for people to know who you truly are. You know,
be yourself and go hard with that shit. Yes.
Right. Number 5th show in the nation now, so that's pretty cool. You know, the
congratulations
thing is,
on that.
Thank you. You know, you get this opportunity at Bellator, like I said, you get to fight who you want to fight. I mean, it can't get any better than that. You know, I wish you the best of luck, my friend, and plan on coming back on the show after the fight because we already know you want all the smoke, so we already know what's going to happen. So we'll just plan on a future episode. We'll do an hour interview one-on-one, and we'll break it down and share some more of you with my listeners and with the world. At this point, Tom, I'm going to hand the mic to you if you have any sponsors, friends or family, social media sites, or just anything else you'd like to add to the program. The floor is yours, my friend.
All right. Follow my Instagram at IFBB Mandy Polk. My awesome sponsor is Coogie Canuck out of Memphis. Forever Fit, it's a gym where I do my personal training, and I'm co-owner in name only, but Brian Miles, my boss, thank you so much. I love you. Thanks for sponsoring me. My coach, Eric Ingram, I was like a little orphan person with no martial arts home in 2017. I didn't know if I would have to move to a different city or what. And he took me under his wing, and the man knows everything. He's a genius. Thank you, Eric, for helping me. I don't know what I'd do without you. Absolute Moving Services, one of my new sponsors. Thanks, guys. Wally Hatchet's down the street from me. I love eating there. Y'all see me all the time. Cloud9 Smoke Shop. Thank you for the CBD. None of my shit hurts right now. I feel pretty good. I got to thank my good friend and client, Anthony Ninocchio, and his nephew Thomas. They come and support me at fights and buy tables and bring my mom, and it's a big family deal, and it's so much fun. So I got to thank them, and of course I got to thank Mom. I love her. My manager, Rod Galvin, my wrestling coach, Mark Beckwith, Tom, if you're out there and you can hear me, who knows where that guy is, but I appreciate him. And I think that's all I'm going to bother anybody with for now.
That's dope. And just to let you know, the link that I put in your inbox, it's archived. So if you want to listen to it a year from now, it'll still be there. If you want to share it after the show,
I'll share it. I won't listen to myself, but I'll share it.
You're like me. I don't like listening to myself after a show either.
Well,
you know,
I was already there. Why do I want? I was already here for this interview. How would I live in the past? Let's talk about
right?
New shit.
Hey, I hope you appreciated the show. I'd love to have you back on. In the words of the great LL Cool J, knock it out the park, Al. Knock it out the park.
Mama said knock you out. She did tell me I had to win, so I'm going to quote him and say, Mama said knock you out.
Oh,
I got
bet
you.
On that. I got your
thanks,
bet.
Thanks,
Don. That,
thank
true.
You so
hey,
much for having
welcome.
Me.
Hey, it's been my honor. You have a good night. Thank you for
you
blessing
too.
My listeners. All right, God bless. Bye-bye. Ladies and gentlemen, that was Misdemeanor Mandy Polk. Now we're going to jump to the West Side Strangler. A man that I've been wanting to interview for a very long time, Mr. Chris Brennan. Oh, here we go. This is where it gets, kind of fun for me. I like the old school. If my computer decides to work,
Hello.
Hey, Chris. This is Don McGuire with the Fighter's Voice. How you doing, sir?
What's happening? How are you?
Just got off an interview with Mandy Polk. I told her.
Oh, misdemeanor, Mandy. I got shit to do. Quit taking up my time.
Oh, that's funny. You know, this is the fun part of my career. You know, I like to bring on, you know, aspects of the sport that were from the conception, you know, people that
sure.
truly have fought that struggle for all these other fighters to be where they're at today. You know, I look at like Todd Medina, you, Pat Miletich, and others as people that have created a pathway for the sport and the future of the sport. What was your greatest takeaway when you left that aspect of competition? What do you feel that you defined in the sport under Chris Brennan?
Man, that's a good question. That's a tough one. I have the hardest, my hardest thing for me to do is to not fight. I love fighting, and I'm actually still in really good shape. I still compete. You know, I won the Jiu-Jitsu World Championships in 2013, 14, and 15. Then I had surgery, and now my kid's fighting. But I still do really well in the room with all the guys that are still fighting. So it's tough. That's my biggest challenge, is to not fight. So it's hard to even say, because I'm obviously not fighting and competing, so I can't say that. But I feel like I'm still in the sport, you know, and all around the competition. And in my head, I'm still doing it, because it's hard to not do it, right? So I just, you know, kind of can keep convincing myself that I can keep doing it. But like you said, I was there at the very beginning. You know, I was literally training the day after the first UFC, and kind of paved the way for a lot of the guys that are fighting now. I fought for free before. But I fought for $500. I fought Joe Stevenson for $500. I fought Antonio McKee for $1,200. You know, I fought for, you know, crazy money. And I drove to Denver one time from California and fought for free and drove home. You know, and just, you know, it was a lot different. So I think I don't love the way the sport's gone at this point, but I know that it was necessary to go this way, for it to flourish and make money and be possible for everyone else to make money. But I kind of liked it the way it was when it was raw. So as far as what I've taken away from it, I don't know, but I can tell you what I've given to it. It's literally everything. You know, I've given everything I've got, and then I've gotten everything in my life because of it. Literally everything.
And you're very, you know, when I announced you were coming on the show, a lot of people were like, they showed a lot of respect for you. And, you know, I got a lot of great feedback about who you were. Of course, I was initially introduced to you by Joe Rice from Bite Me Mouthguards. And,
awesome.
You know, happens to be one of my sponsors. So Joe's listening right now. So if you got anything,
mine
you want
too.
To know him.
Yeah. I tell you what, last year I got my first mouthpiece in 8 years, because of the one I wore before that lasted me 8 years. Like, who has a mouthpiece that lasts 8 years? I'll tell you who, Bite Me.
Yeah,
it's pretty awesome.
You know, I love the guy, man. And, you know, it's like...
Oh, he's an awesome dude. He's taking care of my son now as well while he's fighting.
Yeah.
I've known Joe for a long time.
Yeah, and you know what's cool is he takes my word on it. And, you know, I found this one boxer, Victor Morales Jr. The world was looking at him. The kid had a 14-year career, 2 years a pro, 12 years as an amateur, but he won everything all the way up to the Olympics. You know, and I knew the kid was going somewhere. You know how, you've been in the sport long enough, bro. You know when somebody's going somewhere. And
oh, yeah.
You know they got it. And I knew this kid had it. So I went out to Oregon for the return of 2-pound Steve Forbes, the former IBF world champion. And he's a brother of mine, and Victor Morales was on the card. So I was like, yeah, I'm going. And so I went out and I watched this kid. And, you know, when you got like Mayweather and De La Hoya and Don King and everybody breathing down your neck, you're not going to think that you have an opportunity to get a sponsorship you know, with this kid.
Right.
Because all the money in the world's there. Well, it was like, I'm old school because I'm in my mid-50s, and so I handled it like we did back in the day. You know, I went to his manager first and then tried to get permission other ways, and finally it happened. But make long story short, we ended up signing him, and we signed him to a 2-year sponsorship, you know, under Bite Me, and then he got signed with Golden Boy. So, you know, it was an honor to take Joe for that ride because you know how much Joe has given back to the sport.
Of course, for sure.
You know, and I think Joe's a little humble sometimes, and he's going to get mad at me for this, but I just wanted to show him love because I know you respect him, and, you know, he's
absolutely
truly, he's done a lot for the sport like you. You know, I want to take you back a little bit in time because, man, you've been around for everything. You fought and everything. It's just like, you know, where do I go? I'm like a kid in a candy store right now, Chris. Trust me. But
awesome.
I'm going to get Barbara Walters on your ass. Believe that. You know, you've been a competitor your whole life. But what was it like for the young Chris Brennan? You know, what was it like growing up for you? What initially had you dead set, you know, that this was the path that I need to take? This is an avenue that I'm going to define myself in.
I didn't get to start training until I was 21 years old. I was a troublemaker growing up. I dropped out of school at the end of my freshman year and never went back. I started working construction. Then I started, as I got older, started bouncing. And then Todd Medina, speaking of Todd Medina, used to have a gig at a place called Margaritaville. And he hooked me up working there and doing the door, and they just happened to show the first UFC, man. I saw the first UFC. And I was getting in fights all the time. And I saw the first UFC, and, you know, like a lot of people, I was like, man, look at this skinny dude beating the shit out of all these big guys. They're not beating them up, but, like, you know, submitting all these guys, beating all these guys. So I was just thinking, I've got to do this. He's fighting, he's winning, he's getting paid, he's not getting in trouble. So that just kind of seemed right up my alley. So I went in like the jackass kids I get today and said, hey, I want to fight Hoist Gracie in the UFC. Dude's like, no, you don't. I'm like, well, I want to fight for sure. So he, I got in a boxing ring with this kid named Seneca, who I'll never forget. He ended up going to the Junior Olympics afterwards, and about 14 seconds split my face all over the place. And I was like, holy crap, man. You know, and then I went to another guy who ended up being a good friend of mine, John De La O, and went to his jiu-jitsu class. And, you know, got smashed and ran over, and I was just like, holy crap, man. Like, this stuff's, you know, I thought I was a tough guy because I was a bodybuilder. I was 220 when I first started this sport, lean bodybuilder. And I started training and stopped lifting, and I went from 220 to about 185 in a year, and just got in shape and fell in love with the sport, and I fell in love with the jiu-jitsu aspect of it. You know, I was behind on a lot of things, and I jumped in early, right? Like, not only did I get involved in the sport early, I started fighting with little experience. You know, Pat Miletich was my 4th, 5th, and 7th fight, and it was his 24th, 25th, and 27th fight. So he had so much experience on me. But the first time we fought, we went to a draw, and at 20 minutes straight. The next time we fought, we went for a half an hour straight and lost a split decision. I'm like, this guy is like one of the best in the world, so I'm hanging. So, you know, I was hooked on it. I just knew I could be good, but at the same time, I opened a gym and was running my gym and teaching and training, and I never left to go to camps and stuff. Like, I would go to Big Bear and train and get in shape, but I never trained with outside guys, so everything was on me. Like, I learned everything from, you know, on my own, and so I probably could have been a lot better. I got better later. Like, I fought 2 more times at the end of my career after I had not fought for a couple years and just ran 2 dudes over, then retired. I got a divorce. Confidence went through the roof. I fought those 2 times. Then I won Worlds 3 times in a row and Pans. You know, I was just on fire. And still today, I feel like if I was as good as I am right now when I was 30, I would have been very, very competitive, much more competitive. I took fights against guys who I may or may not have been able to beat at a different time, but because I was fucking broke, I had kids, I was, you know, fighting I showed up to fights because I had to fight sometimes. You know, I took fights because I needed the money, and it was literally all I had. I gave everything to fight, so it was everything I had. So there's some fights on my records that I think could have gone another way had I been a little more prepared and not been fighting for the money. But, you know, it got me through. It got my kids where they are. And, you know, it was worth it in the end to me.
Yeah, I feel you on that. You know, I hope you don't mind where I'm going to go with this, but, man,
nope.
I'm an OG, man, so, you know, I get in deep thought because these shows intrigue me because I started in the sport 24 years ago, but in boxing, then transitioned to Pride, Glory, and then the UFC, and then Bellator and Invicta and such. But, you know, you talk about Pat Miletich. Okay, you know, Pat's my brother in life. And we hang out when we can, but I'm gonna tell you a story. This dude come on my show, okay? And this is the kind of this is where my mindset is, and I want you to know this. You know, he lost his two brothers that were sexually molested by a priest to suicide. So he was feeling the burden of his mother's sorrow on his shoulders. So when he went into UFC 15. He told himself, either you win the championship tonight or I'm going to blow my brains out. And he told the story on my show. So if you look at that mentality, bro, and if he was that way in life and you went the aspects that you did with him, then you won. You won, because if you got a dude that's willing to blow his head off if he doesn't win a fight, then that's a guy that is just as pure as they come, and so are you. So, I mean, you hung with him. And see, I'm different than everybody else. I don't like this loss and win category bullshit. I think you learn a lesson. You know, I don't see how it could ever be a loss. You know, it's always a lesson in life. And the one thing that intrigues me about you and other fighters from the early days is most people really don't understand that you guys fought for nothing, basically. You know, you fought three times a night. If you got $1,000, you were lucky. You know, people don't understand the struggle. I do, because I was there, you know, and it's like, how do you look at it now that you see these fighters in the sport complaining about their pay? And then you look back at what you got paid back in the day, bro.
Right. It's frustrating. A funny example of that, Rampage used to train with me. And he was making about $800 to $1,000 a fight for King of the Cage. And he got $10,000 for his fight with Sakuraba. And he was so pissed off that he was fighting for $10,000 and he'd just been fighting for $800, you know, a month before that. And I was like, dude, like, how are you going to be upset that you're fighting for $10,000? That's a big jump from $1,000, you know, it's 10 times your purse. And he just wasn't, you know, he wasn't happy with it. And I was thinking, man, I would have been super pumped at that time, you know, to make that jump. And, you know, but yeah, you know, I think people fight for different reasons. And there's some people now who are just really good at the sport of fighting. And there's guys who are fucking grinders who had to fight, who have always fought and whatever. A good example is my kid. You know, my kid came up very, very different than me, but he is a fucking wizard. He's going to be a champion, I guarantee it, in the sport. And, but he didn't grow up getting beat up. He didn't grow up fighting, never been in a street fight in his life. But he's fighting in the cage now. He's 4-0 undefeated, you know. But me, I have 100 street fights before I ever got in the cage. You know, it was just a totally different time frame. So I would have fought for free, literally would have fought for free for my entire career if I could have got by somehow, you know. So the people who bitch about their money now, you know, it is what it is. It's a little bit of the generation as well. But yeah, I don't. I mean, I do laugh at it, you know, a little bit. But here I am, at the same time trying to get my son paid, right? So.
Yeah, your son's dope, man, and you know he's got an opportunity in Bellator, right?
Yeah, he just signed a 5-5 deal after winning his debut with them. You want to know a cool story real quick, speaking of Pat? On the 20-year anniversary of me fighting Pat, my son was fighting in LFA, and Miletich got to interview him that night. And dude, it was the craziest thing to think back. We all three stood there doing the interview, and I was like, 20 years ago right now, me and you fought, and now you're standing here interviewing my kid. It was wild.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know the trip about how he even became a commentator. He was scheduled to fight one night, and his opponent didn't show up, and they happened to be a commentator short, so that they asked him, you know, would you commentate tonight, Pat? Says, that depends. How much does it pay? And so they told him, and he says, well, hell yeah, I'll do it for that much. My opponent didn't show up. I'm not getting paid. And they liked him so much that they offered him a full-time job. He says, hey, I don't know about that, you know. And so they wrote a number down on a piece of paper, and they showed it to him. And he's like, fuck yeah, where's my cat, you know. And the rest is history. But the sad part about the story is, you know, I know the commentating is going to continue for Pat Miletich with LFA, but the last event was the last promotion-wise televised aspect on Access TV. They no longer have a home for television.
I just heard that a couple days ago.
Yeah, it's going to be crazy to see how that works out.
He's staying with them, though?
Huh?
He's staying with them?
That I'm not 100% sure. I hadn't made that call to him because it's been kind of a crazy week, you know,
right.
But I plan on getting in touch with him, like, you know, over the phone, not on the show, but
I love Pat, dude. He's a good man. I like him a lot.
Yeah. Well, you know, every time he's around me, he always calls me up and says, you coming to the fights, McGuire? And I'm like, didn't plan on it. Well, you are now, so. And then I gotta go to the fights, and it's like, all right, bro. But, you know, that's what I love about this sport, and that's where I was going to kind of go with you next. You know, I've had Jacob Stitch Duran, who's also a sponsor of my show. You know, I asked him, what was his greatest takeaway from the sport? And he said, you know, when he was cornering Klitschko, and he looked down at him and said, you can call me son. Then I look at others in the sport, and they say it's the relationships
right.
that they take away. What is it for Chris Brennan that when you sit back and you truly think about it from your heart, what was the most meaningful takeaway from such a tremendous career?
I mean, I would have to say the same thing as far as, because it's literally all I've ever done, all I have is from it, you know, so the relationships, the people that I've known, the people that I've bumped shoulders with or done business with or fought with, like Pat, you know, me and Pat have so much respect for each other because of the wars we went to. The people that I've met and still know, you know, I haven't fought in the UFC or been in the limelight in 20 years. And I walked in with my son to fight, and John McCarthy was like, Chris, and hugged me. And, you know, and I haven't seen him in years and years. We trained together at the Gracie Academy back in like 95, 96. And, so yeah, man, the people that I was able to meet, train with, fight, you know, the relationships for sure are one of the biggest things, and you know that they've been able to take away from the sport. And then again, like I said, my life since probably 1993 has been this sport, nothing but this sport. You know, I've dated girls, and they're just like, "Dude, stop fucking talking about this sport." I'm like, "I literally got nothing else to talk about. This is all I do. You know, this is all I do." And when I was married, my ex-wife was just like, every shirt's a jiu-jitsu shirt? And I was like, yeah. You know, it's just, it has been my life since the day I got into it, and it will be until the end, you know? I mean, that's what I've fallen in love with. That's what I carried the sport on my back when I could, and it dragged me along when it could. So, yeah, I mean, that's the what I take away from is my life.
Yeah, you know, it's a trip because I don't think most people get us old dudes from the trench, man. It's like,
yeah.
I haven't worn anything different other than a fight shirt for 24
yeah.
years.
Yeah.
You know, God bless my wife.
Because
I go to a nice restaurant, I'm wearing a fight shirt. I don't care. I don't
yeah.
give a. I mean, that's just, that's how I am. I haven't bought a shirt in 24 years. I don't plan on it anytime soon either.
Right.
It's pretty dope, man, because you correlated a lot of your career, and then you went off like a freaking bomb in jiu-jitsu. You know, and it's really cool because I got to interview John Velasco on my show, and talks about him, Vitor Belfort, Todd Medina, and all them going over to Brazil and ultimately ending up at a Brazilian jiu-jitsu tournament. And they're like, what the fuck is this? And they come back to the States, but they're enthralled by it. So they you know, talk these two purple belts to come over from Brazil and train all of them. You know, it's Joe Rogan, Todd Medina, John Velasco, Alano, and all these guys. And then, like, 3 months later, Carlson Gracie Sr. opens up his first academy on the West Coast. And John Velasco Alano was the first one ever to be, you know, black belted under Carlson Gracie Sr. And the first Filipino, too, ever. You know, the mat is a tremendous place. The mat I love. You know, I've dealt with legends like Jean-Jacques Machado, Rafael Lovato, J.W. Wright, Ezra Lennon, Tyler Bishop, and many tremendous professors along my walk. What is it about the mat that has you... It's like you're reliving your life again on the mat, bro.
Yeah, it's a one, like, you know, they say the mat doesn't lie. That's no bullshit. We just had this conversation the other day because you can go through a boxing or kickboxing class and you can even spar and not get your ass kicked if you just kind of move around a little bit and run around a little bit. You know, at the end, you can feel good. In jiu-jitsu, you know who won every match. You know, you can't bullshit. You either win or you lose. And, you know, especially coming up in it, there's no bullshit, and it's the truth. You know, the mat is the truth, and the bond that you create with the guys that you train with, that you coach, you know, my students or whatever, it's just it's pretty amazing. And that's what I was saying, like, coming up, I came up with Todd, man. Me and Todd used to train in a guy named Ken Gabrielson's garage together. And we trained at a place, I trained with Kimo at a place called the Thunder Center with a wrestling place at Calvary Chapel, you know, back before Kimo even fought Hoist. You know, we were talking about him fighting Hoist before that fight even happened. And I got a guy, Randy Ziegler, who was training Kimo. He would mount Kimo on me with small gloves on and say, Kimo, strike, Chris, get out. What? You know, and he would just beat my face in. But you love it. Like, another example, I used to train Marco Huas, and he used to beat the shit out of me so bad till I was crying. I would lay on my bathroom floor sobbing. This dude, 240 pounds, it would beat me up like I was Pedro size, and I wasn't. And I would call him the next day and say, hey, are we going to train today? And he thought I was crazy. But you love it, man. If you're into this sport, you love it. And I just could never get enough of it. But it's also the humbler, you know, it'll get people that come in my gym, and you'll know day one if they're going to last 2 days or not, just because the type of people that fighting attracts, the jiu-jitsu aspect of it is a totally different attraction than the fighter guy, you know, the fighter guy that fights at school. I had a guy come in tonight that wanted to fight one of my fighters, and my, you know, literally came out on the mat. It's been a long time since this happened, and got thrown in the air and landed on his head and, you know, got his ass whooped. But it still happens. Like, people think they can fight. They have that false, you know, idea that they can fight. So I think fighting attracts a different group than the jiu-jitsu group. The jiu-jitsu group, man, is a much different, more chill, laid-back, acai sandals wearing, you know, just a way more chill group of people. And yeah, it's just the bond and you know, group of or the relationships, like we said earlier, the relationships that you create in that is just second to none for sure. Everybody I know, literally everybody I know except for two of my best friends, are related to the sport.
Yeah, it's crazy, you know, because like I've even interviewed Justin McCauley. You know, trust me, I've interviewed all the old timers, man. It's like, you know,
yeah.
I could have went on a lot of different avenues on fights and things, but I mean, hell, you fought everybody I know.
Yeah.
Like Joe Daddy Stevenson, Antonio McKee. I mean, it's like we're all homies that talk on the phone. So it's weird, but it's cool because, you know, you just don't hop on a radio show. And so first and foremost, I'm honored you came on my show. You know, I'm not done with you yet, but, you know, I just want
to
say thank
you. I'm super happy to be on the show. Of course,
yeah,
man. I'm super pumped to be on it.
It's cool, man, because I keep it real. You're not going to get a Wikipedia or a Tapology show out of me. You know, that's just not going to happen. You know,
right.
I think those types of shows, there's 100,000 of them, and why in the hell should you waste your time on one of them? You know,
right.
Just don't tell Pat that they call me the Barbara Walters of MMA, because you'll get a 30-minute speech, bro, and I don't want to get an hour-long call. But it's the truth, man. He gets pissed, bro. It's like, you know, I kind of took it as a compliment because it's the interview everybody wants, and that's what
right.
a lot of fighters always ask to come back on the show, because I let you be you. And that's
right.
how life should be, man. You know, people want to get to know you away from the television, away from social media. So I kind of want to dig a little bit deeper into the man now, if I can. And if there's anything that I ask you don't want to answer, just tell me, bro, and we're good. But, you know, take yourself away from the sport. You're just Chris Brennan, the man. You know, you look at your son, because you've got two sons, but you look at your son that's in the sport, you know, how humbling is that? And how proud of you are, you know, of your son, to see that he's found an aspect of himself and he's excelling at that. How does that make Chris Brennan, the father, truly feel inside his heart?
Man, it's to be honest, I it's emotional for me. Like that bond that we talk about with the people that we meet and grow up with on the mat, I'm now sharing that with my son. My other son also, man, my youngest boy is an eight-time from a kid up jiu-jitsu world champion. He's a 2-time state wrestling champion, a national champion, and now he's wrestling D1 as a freshman in college. Their jiu-jitsu is just unreal. And dude, I've come to tears many times just watching them compete. Every time Lucas has fought, I've cried after the fight's over. You know, I guess I'm probably a pretty emotional person anyway, but that brings like a totally different emotion out of me. Lucas fighting is a whole different thing. I feel bad for anybody that ever had to watch me fight that loved me, but it's you know, it's a whole different feeling. But the proud, I talk about them a lot, but I try not to ever brag about them a lot because I don't ever want them to have any more pressure than they probably already feel like they have being my kid. And I never pushed them. I never was an asshole to them through training. You know, I made them start training in junior high so they could learn self-defense, and they just took it and ran. And so even had a late start to some of the young kids, but the bond that me and my kids have because of this sport, man, I can't even explain it. It is my kid fights in Bellator and kisses me and hugs me and tells me he loves me before he walks into the cage. They kiss me and hug me and tell me they love me before they get on the mat, before wrestling mats. And they don't give a shit if their friends are there, who's there. You know, we just have a major, major bond and love between us. And it's something that I cherish because I didn't have that. I didn't have that at all. And that may be one of the reasons I give it so much to them, but it is something that's extremely special to me, and I hope it doesn't stop for a long, long time.
Well, I don't think it's going to stop anytime soon. You know,
yeah.
As a father myself, I look back, and my son's a world famous DJ. You know, he didn't fall in my footsteps, that's for sure. I tried to get him to, but
right.
Photography just wasn't his thing, and journalism he could give two craps about. But you know, I think it's a tremendous aspect that has been added to you, because you look at the times we live in, the way society is going, you just don't see that family bond, that unity. And I think it's
right.
Tremendous that the sport, you know, brings this type of unity to you. You know, it's invoked a lot of aspects. You look at Antonio McKee and AJ McKee getting ready to fight on the 28th on a card together. It's not the first time in the sport, but the first time in the United States that a father and son have fought on the same card.
So
you know,
he is fighting. Someone told me that. I didn't know Antonio was actually fighting.
Yeah, he's actually on the early prelims.
Wow.
Yeah, 49 years
That's
old.
That's crazy. Is it is or is not the first time father and son have fought?
It's not the first time in the sport, because it's happened in the UK, but it's the first time on American soil that a father and son have fought on the same card. Yeah, and it's the $1 million 16-man tournament for his son.
Right.
You know, because I interviewed Tone, and I was like, you know, don't you feel that it's kind of a bad night to come in on, because the pressure's already there on AJ, who's undefeated. He's
right.
Rolling into the $1 million tournament, and, you know, don't you think that this was, you know, kind of a double burden on them. But they seem to got their camp handled down, man. And, you know, I got to give them credit. You know, they both come out victorious that night, and it's a hoorah for the body shop. But, you know, what would it mean for Chris Brennan to get an opportunity like that? I mean,
Dude, I could still fight, but if you offered me $1 million, I would not fight on the card my kid fights on. I couldn't. I can barely function throughout the day as it is when he fights. Like,
totally
I might seem cool on fight day. I'm not cool, man. I'm a wreck, and I just play cool for him as much as I can. I could not fight on the same card as him at all. Also, AJ has already established himself and has made a name for himself, and everyone knows him even more than Antonio at some point right now. You know, like Antonio's kind of like I was, where everyone before knows him, but not everyone now knows him. My son, I would not want to step on his toes or overshadow him at all. And that might happen because he's not that popular yet. He's not 14-0 like AJ. So I would not want that at all. I do everything I can, man, to let him do his thing and build his own thing. But like fight night and Bellator, the whole time they're like, Chris Brennan's son's coming up next. Chris Brennan's son. Chris Brennan's son. And I asked him. I said, does that bother you? I said, because that shit might go on for a while. And you know, and I apologize because I really don't. It's cool. He's like, no, it's cool. You know, and if it is, awesome. But I just don't want to take away from him what he's doing, because he's the one that's doing it. You know, he's the one that's in the room every single day, busting his ass 26 hours a week. And I just, you know, I love it, but I don't want to, and it's cool for me that people still remember me. I don't need it. I don't need the limelight that, or to take it from him.
Yeah,
Antonio and AJ are opposites. You know, AJ is popular right now. He's hot. You know, but Luke's just getting started.
Yeah. Hey, but I remember when I first had AJ on my show. He was his first, it was his debut, and you know, hey, the sky's the limit for your son right now. I tell you that much. I've seen some of his fights, bro. It's like, oh man. The sport don't know what's coming. I think they got another AJ on their hands, to be quite honest with you. You know, and that's tremendous, because you know, I like to see things come 360, and they have in multiple aspects with, you know, Antonio's family, with your family. But Chris, you know, we all have a different aspect, a different layer to us. You know, let's say you show up to the gym early and there's nobody there, and you just sit back and you're on the mat. And for that brief moment, you get that reflection into Chris Brennan. What do you see, brother?
Man, so I am a extremely grateful person, and I've been in the sport 26 years now, and I'm still as grateful now as ever. But literally every day when I walk up to the door of my gym, because I have a beautiful gym here in Texas, every day I walk up to the gym, I still now cannot believe that that's my gym and this is my life and all the people inside are there for me. I am blown away every day. I'm grateful every day. I never, ever take for granted what I've got from this sport, ever. And my gym is, you know, that's something that I look back a lot of times, man, and what it, the wins and the losses, like you said, there's not a big deal about the win-loss category. Instead of the wins and losses, the fights that I've had have given me everything I've got today. The losses as well, the people that I fought, the events that I fought, and they are the reason I've got what I've got today. So I'm humbled and grateful every day. I have zero ego in this still. It wouldn't do me any good. And if it wasn't for this sport, like I said, I would, like a million of the fighters say, I probably would be in jail, and I probably wouldn't even have my kids, to be honest, you know? I'm grateful every day at my gym, every day. Whether there's 100 people in the room or 5 people, when I walk out on the mat, no bullshit, I'm still like, when the mat's packed, I'm like, man, how did I do this? Like, all these people are here to take class from me. You know, I get messages from people about my relationship with my kids and how much they love it, and they try to implement that with their kids, and I'm just like, dude, like, what an amazing thing for me that it's not even something I'm trying really hard to do. We just did it. It just happened for us. You know, we just kind of, that relationship just happened, and so, you know, I guess the biggest word I can say, man, when I sit back and do that is I'm grateful. Grateful for everything. I take zero for granted. Nothing.
So, because, you know, separate, you know, I like to separate things. I'll be honest with you. About 5 years ago, I got my first call to go shoot a jiu-jitsu seminar, bro. And now, mind you, I shot Muay Thai, boxing, you know, the UFC, and all aspects, backyard brawls, things of this nature. I go to this thing. I've always turned them down. This time it was like a homie that asked me to do it. So, and that being J.W. Wright. So I go and I shoot the seminar.
Where's he, Tennessee?
No, he's in Missouri. He's Gracie Lamar. Yeah, so I go and I shoot the seminar, and I tell you what, it was the most boring shit I ever shot in my life. You know, I'm going to be honest with you, it was the most boring shit. But the money was good. I'm not going to lie. You know, I'm transparent in life, and money was good. And from that shoot, I got offered a bunch of more shoots, you know, the Bovado and Dustin Diness and, you know, Montero and Alexander Huddleston, you know, and I shoot all these guys now. But to get to my point, you know, it's like after about a year and a half in, I had J.W. Wright on my show, and we were talking about jiu-jitsu. And I asked him, if you had to put everything down, because you've already accomplished everything, you own Fuji BJJ, what would you like to see transpire in JW Wright's life next? And he said, for you to put the fucking camera down and get on a gi and roll with me. So the seminar was coming up in about a week, and I get there, and they got a gi on the corner of the mat for me. And I'll tell you what, I did learn a little bit from shooting, and it impressed the professor, but it didn't stop him from choking my ass out. You know, I guess that's kind of the way you get brought into the jiu-jitsu world, is you get a nice little choke out from your professor. But it showed me a side that I'd never seen before. It showed me a brotherhood that I didn't understand before. You know, and I don't think the casual fan gets this. You know, you got boxing, it's a totally different brotherhood. MMA, it's a totally different brotherhood. But when it comes to jiu-jitsu, you got the 9-to-5ers. You got the people that bust their ass
yep.
every day. They do this sport because they love it, not because they get paid for it.
Right.
And that creates a whole new level. And, man, my love for jiu-jitsu now is tremendous. You know, because not only did I learn more than I thought shooting it, you know, it stays in your mind, but like we talked about, the relationships, the brotherhood, the meaning of it. And it's kind of cool. You know, the only thing that I wanted to ask you, you know, further on that aspect is, how hard was it for you to correlate, because you're going to get this, my listeners might not, but you're going to get this, how hard was it for you to correlate the old man jits into the new era jits and transition your school into that aspect?
So I'm going to be unhumble for just a second. And I was the first guy to take off a gi and train and teach jiu-jitsu no gi full time in America. Okay, 1997. I opened my gym in 1998, but I took my gi off and I didn't put it back on as a blue belt. And the style that I created, I didn't have a teacher after blue belt. Okay, I literally taught myself. I'd never had a coach after blue belt. And I taught myself. I didn't watch people's instructionals. I didn't watch people's stuff. I literally taught myself while training to where I am today. And my game developed on a trial and error. Stuff that works, stuff that doesn't work. Stuff that works, stuff that doesn't work. And I didn't have someone telling me what was right and what was wrong. So I didn't have that stuff worked for me, stuff worked that I was able to teach, that I didn't have a coach telling or a teacher telling me, no, this is the right way, or no, this is the right way. I found the right way because I found what worked and what didn't work. And my game, dude, I'm telling you, my kimuras have gotten better, my guillotines have gotten better, my passing's gotten better, but my game has been the same always. I have the same. Dude, I didn't compete in a jiu-jitsu match since Marcelo in like 2005 at ADCC, all the way until 2013 at Worlds. And I ran through three dudes, submitted them all. The next year, ran through three dudes, submitted them all. The next year, submitted everyone. And it was all black belts. I hadn't competed against one in 10 years. And I was just running dudes over with the same style that I'd always had, but I'd never really competed in jiu-jitsu except for against Marcelo and a couple other small tournaments where I beat Mac Danzig and Bill Cooper in one day. Antonio McKee actually was in that tournament in a different weight class. But you know, so I really haven't changed a lot, and I always loved leg locks, you know, but my passing and the way I staple the leg and things like that, I haven't had to change a lot of things to shut down a lot of the bullshit that's in the game today. You know, I enjoy watching some of it, but I can't watch. I can't watch some of the new stuff. Drives me crazy to watch it.
Yeah,
not gonna lie.
You know,
not gonna lie.
you're a humble dude, man. Because my listeners, he want to let you know that he was also the 2014 no gi panel.
What's that? You're cutting out.
So I said
you were just cutting
no,
out. Can you say it one more time?
I said, yeah, I want to let my listeners know that you're kind of humble because You didn't let anybody know that you're the 2014, you were also the 2014 Nogi Pan American champion. You know, so there's a lot of humility to you, and I think that's a tremendous aspect. You know, God, man, this has been a quite...
I wouldn't even say that I won Worlds if it wasn't for, you know, the fact that it was just kind of shocking to me how well the game that I had been working on by myself worked against everybody. And I submitted the first, like, 12 people the exact same way. Henzo, when I went to Pans that year, I stayed at Henzo's house. And he was going to come coach me the next day. I flew by myself. He was going to come coach me the next day. I woke up in the morning, and he said, hey, I can't come coach you. And I said, oh, what happened? He goes, your first match is against one of my black belts. And I said, oh, shit, okay. I said, that makes sense, no problem. So he throws me the keys to a $110,000 Mercedes in New Jersey and says, go ahead and drive into New York and do your thing today. Good luck, and I'll see you tonight. Come back, and we'll barbecue. So I was like, holy shit. So I literally drove into New York in this badass car, try and find parking without getting door dinged or something. I go inside, and I my first match is against Henzo guy, and I armbarred the guy. And then I beat a couple more guys, and I won. And I went back to him when I got there, and he said, that's why I didn't want to coach you. You know, it's like it wouldn't have been okay. But he, you know, he cornered Gil Castillo when I lost to him in the UFC. And the entire match was him yelling, watch the triangle, watch the armbar, watch the guillotine, watch the... Constantly the whole match. And after the fight, he walked up to me. He goes, man, your jiu-jitsu is beautiful. You know, it's beautiful. And that was one of the coolest things I've ever heard in my entire life coming from him. It was so cool. He reffed my fight in Brazil. And that's when I met him back in 1995. And we've just been super chill ever since. And I love that dude. So I forgot what even got off on that. Oh, talking about Pan Ams. Yeah, it was just it was a funny story because he's like, he woke up in the morning. He's like, yeah, sorry, he can't go.
That's just so cool, man. You know,
yeah.
I just got two more questions for you, if you don't mind.
No problem.
And then we'll let
no
you
problem.
Go. You know, I know your boys are probably listening. Like I said, I'm an old man that likes to, you know, really just share life and, you know, get thoughts of people that they don't generally share. So I hope you don't mind. So if you had to make a statement to your boys, not as Chris Brennan, the West Side Strangler, Chris Brennan, the creator of Nogi, but Chris Brennan, the man, if you had to make a statement to your boys about how proud you truly are of them, what would that statement be, my friend?
Man, you trying to make me cry?
Hey, I made Daniel Cormier cry, bro, so it's all good.
Yeah, you know, My statement to them is, if they never did anything like they do now, I would love them and be just as proud as I am. The fact, though, that we're able to share what they do, they'll never know, man. There's no way I'll ever be able to express the enjoyment that I've gotten out of this. I don't care, like, nothing in the world matters to me besides, you know, what's going on with me and them right now, our relationship, obviously running my business, but I don't need anything else for the rest of my life, literally don't need anything else for the rest of my life except for their success, you know, their happiness and what's going on. So I'm just so happy that, number one, being the punk kid that I was, that I somehow got blessed with two kids that are amazing kids, amazing humans, man. They're amazing people, not just, you know, good at their sport, but they're just not, they're really cool kids and everybody likes them. So I'm more proud of them for that than anything else they've accomplished. I think everything else came easy because of the way they are, you know, the way they are as humans. So I would just tell them that I love them and I'm so grateful that we have the bond and relationship that we have and I'll always be proud of them no matter what. but they blow my mind every time they do something. You know, I'm still surprised and shocked every time they do something that's impressive, you know. It's crazy.
Yeah, you know, that's so dope because, you know, through the thick and thin and adversity and everything, you know, I raised my son, you know. We might not have known where we were going to eat the next day or sleep the next day, but I was there for my son. And so a lot of these fathers out there that don't even pay their kids no attention, you're the ones that are losing out. You know, you're the ones that are losing out because if you're a father and you don't even give your kid the time of day, you don't know how much of a beautiful, beautiful aspect of life you're truly missing out. You know, thank you for sharing that, homie. You know, Don Turnage is a little brother of mine, and, you know, I promised I would ask him this, ask you this, so I'm going to ask you. He said for me to ask you about the taco truck and the story behind it.
The taco truck?
Yeah. I don't know what that's supposed to mean, homie.
Shit, I don't know, man. The taco truck.
Yeah. He said you'd ask the story about the taco truck.
I have no idea.
We'll have to get back with him on that.
I wish I did so I could answer it.
Hey, you're good, bro. You know, he asked me to ask you. I followed through with my word. We're good on that. But, you know.
Yeah, I wish I did because I'm not afraid to answer anything.
Oh, I know that. Trust me, I know that. You know, thank you for honoring my show, homie. You know, it's like I get a chance. You know, these are the shows I love to do because, I mean, I can interview any champion I want. I can interview any legend I want. I like to mix it up. I like to bring, as you've seen in tonight's show, the up-and-comers and mix it in with the legends because I think all aspects of the sport need to be shared. You know,
right.
You've created greatness from UFC to Pride to Cage Rage, KOTC, Shooto, and then just tore it up in the creation of Nogi and Jiu-Jitsu. And you've got a tremendous aspect going on down there for you in Texas. But at the end of the day, what would Chris Brennan like to be remembered for the most?
A good dad, dude. I just want to be a good father to my kids, a better person, you know. And as far as in the sport goes, I hope that I don't know, man. I just to be remembered. To be honest, just be cool to be remembered. You know, like I said, we laid the path and the groundwork for the people fighting now, and if there's a way for that to be recognized, you know, and us be remembered for that and some of my fights, but I just want to be a good father. That's it.
Yeah.
I don't really care about much other than that.
Yeah. And I love that about you, bro. You always got a voice on my show. That's why we called it the Fighter's Voice. You know,
Cool.
It's a show about you guys, man. And I actually let the fighters name it. So, you know, I did syndicated radio and all that, ABC, NBC, CBS, and I got tired of all the bullshit, man. I wanted to give back to the sport the way it gave to me. I wanted to give fighters a true voice, a place where they can come and truly share who they are. Because you've been in them interviews, bro. How was your last weight cut? What did you do? What did you change this
for? Oh, yeah, I've done the same interview a thousand times.
Blah, blah, blah. Yeah, it's like, man, go beat up somewhere, bro, because, you know, there's real life to be talked about. You know, you've created so many aspects. Bro, I know I took the interview longer than I should have, and hell, I could probably talk to you for another 2 hours because you're such a tremendous man
too.
In your walk. But I truly enjoyed it. I would love to have you back on again in the future if you're down for it, homie.
For sure.
Because
for sure,
truly
that'd be awesome.
Have. Yeah, but I'm going to leave you on this note. You know, you're part of the foundation. You're a brick that was put into the foundation of the sport. And that can never be undone. And on top of that, you create a legacy and a future path for your children to grow, watch, and learn, and become who they are. And that speaks profoundly about you. You're a tremendous man, and you're a tremendous gladiator. And truly, man, it's been humbling to have you on my show. I can't wait to have you back on again. I'm gonna hand the mic to you, homie. If you have any friends or family, any sponsors, any social media sites, or just anything else you'd like to add to the program, the floor is all yours, Chris.
Oh man, I want to say thanks to you for bringing me on the show. You know, I'm like I said, I'm always grateful to get the opportunity to speak to somebody or when I teach seminars, same thing. So I appreciate you bringing me on. So thank you for that. Sponsors, you know, my son's got a bunch of sponsors. Now I've got a couple of doctor sponsors. You know, I've got a orthopedic surgeon, my Dr. Miller, who's at Legacy Orthopedics, and I got another guy, North Spine Care of North Texas, and those are my hookups these days. Guys like who've been around for my entire career, like Joe Rice with Bite Me Mouth Guards. You know, I'm still wearing about me Bite Me Mouth Guard 20 something years later. But like I said, my last mouth guard lasted 8 years. You know, so I just, you know, just thanks to everybody who's ever supported me in my career. Thanks even to the people who didn't support me and didn't appreciate me in my career. I don't, you know, you get something from everybody. So, just anybody that's listening, thanks for listening. Or if it gets repeated, thanks for listening. Then, you know, I'm just, like I said, I'm always grateful to be able to do anything to give back to this sport.
And you truly have. And just to let you know about that link that I shared in your inbox, it'll never go away. I archive my link. So if you want to share it again or you want to listen to it a year from now, 5 years from now, it'll still be there. I believe that fighters should always have an opportunity to go back and listen and learn from their progression. You know, it's tremendous, like with Liam McGarry. You know, when it was dope, one show he said, you know, Don, I can't remember a part of my career that you weren't there. And then, you know, it's kind of trip because you jump to Kung Lee and he stopped me in the middle of my tracks and he says, I don't care what Pat says, you really are Barbara Walters. You know, so, you know, I don't know how you take it, but, you know, I just want to give the fighters a true opportunity to share who they are. And
right.
I appreciate you coming on my show and letting my listeners share your story. Because that's, what better way to get it than from the horse's mouth? You know, Chris, what you've done in this sport is tremendous. And you're an awesome man in your walk, and you're even a greater father. So with that being said, I want to thank you for coming on tonight's show. You know, I know it was long, but hey, bro, I truly appreciated it, and I can't wait to do it again, man.
Thanks for listening to me, sir. Appreciate it.
Hey, before I let you go, where can my listeners find you on social media?
On Instagram, it's I am Chris Brennan. Oh, no, I'm sorry. Instagram it's a pain in the ass. It's Chris_Brennan_3-time_world champ. It's long. And then Facebook is just my name. It's easy to type in and you find me on Facebook. That's it. It's Facebook and Instagram.
You should have made your IG the West Side Strangler, bro.
What's that?
You should have made your Instagram the West Side Strangler.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I could change it to that for sure. I use that a lot on other stuff. I love that nickname. It's a great one. It's a funny story how that nickname happened. So if you ever want me on again, I can tell you that story. It's funny.
Oh, yeah. We're going to have you back on, man. Next time we're going to plan a little one-on-one episode with no other fighters on. Because there's too many layers to you to share in one night, bro. With that being said, you have a good night, brother. And God bless you, man. And take
thanks,
your son,
sir.
Good luck.
Thank you very much.
Ladies and gentlemen, that was a hell of an interview with both these tremendous warriors, Mandy Pohl, tremendous, tremendous. Chris Brennan, man. A lot of people didn't believe me. He created the no-gi aspect in the sport, but he did. And talk about humble, man. He was the no-gi black belt world champion 2013, 14, and 15. And in 2014, he double gold at Worlds and won the no-gi Pan American Championships. I mean, but didn't he want to talk about it? You know, I hate to reference other interviews, but you look at Kung Lee. He says, if you look back at the past or you talk about your achievements, you can't move forward in life. I kind of get the same vibe from Chris Brennan. You know, much love to my sponsor, Jill Rice, for hooking that up. I want to thank my sponsor, Finish MMA, with Juan Martinez, and Cutman for Hire Supplies with Jacob Fitzgerald and Juan Ramirez, and the 86ers.net with Alfred and Freddie. I want to thank Ian Matthews and Rich Cho from Bellator for allowing me to interview Mandy Polk. It's been a tremendous show. I want to wish everybody a good evening, and God bless. I don't know what I'm going to take us out with. I'm just going to hit something, and we'll do it. Peace.
Another one, Sacramento summer one, golden on the beat, shit slapping, yeah, another one, Khaled is the number one, Bay is the dummy one, Cash can't rap, knees slapping, yeah, funny one, rapping rappers up there, smoke you like a honey bun, to dump you in the backwoods,